got it going on tonight. Don't nobody want to fight. They want to see a tight show.
Better have my donuts lays a track. Fatty's ramen. We need to beat that rocks. Wait, take me to commercial.
If he was in a bad mood before, that song had to be very uplifting right there.
Yes. I'm not in a bad mood.
You're not in a good mood. You're not in a mood.
I'm in a mood, yeah. I'm not in a good mood. I'm not in a bad mood. I'm just in a mood.
So, I'm sure somebody's in a bad mood right now. You want to start with that? You want to talk?
Why don't you take a stand, dude?
You know what, man?
Why don't you show and prove, dude?
You know what, man? If it wasn't for like a pretty good couple of days of wrestling,
yeah,
I'd probably be down to start with this with Game of Thrones,
because yes,
that was a hell of an episode.
But it was.
We'll leave that to the end. All right. Well, the news broke maybe a couple of hours ago, so.
So you rushed right on over, right? I mean, like, you saw the news and you took off to my house and you're like, I gotta talk about this. You gotta get stuff off your chest.
I gotta put this on wax. Roman Reigns suspended 30 days wellness policy violation. I mean, I think it's a pretty big deal.
Do you think it's a pretty big deal, or is it a big deal?
Well, I think it is.
Why do you think that is?
I was about to get to that.
All right, cool.
So I think you were having a pretty good build with going to a triple threat match with these three members of S.H.I.E.L.D. So while I don't necessarily like the decision to make Ambrose the champion, I'm definitely interested in seeing a match with those three guys fighting for the belt. And I think that, this is something that people saw coming from, ever since the S.H.I.E.L.D. did break up. And it's one of the, I think, more compelling things that they had on the table to do. And then right when you think you're going to have it, then Roman Reigns takes this wellness violation. So, and then, I think the other thing is, a lot of people they don't like Roman Reigns.
Now we talk about the thing that really matters, right?
Right. Well, they don't like Roman Reigns. And, I think, in a lot of reasons, they don't really have much justification or for their dislike. But this kind of just like lays it right out there for those that dislike him to get this gives them all the ammunition that they need to attack this guy even further. And even just still in the last few minutes, just kind of catching up on my timeline because it's all over it. People are out there. He shouldn't be allowed to be in the main event at whatever the hell it is.
Battleground,
yeah. Because I guess the 30-day suspension, that Battleground pay-per-view is more than 30 days out. So he should be, in terms of that suspension, he should be good to go. But there's already like a groundswell of people trying to say he shouldn't be allowed on that pay-per-view for whatever reason. So I don't know. It just opened up like, another thing too is like, I thought the match with him and Rollins was really, actually both of them I thought were really good, but the pay-per-view one in particular. So I think as it's been seen, if people want to be honest about it, when Roman Reigns is put into matches with the right guys, he puts on a good match. He put on good matches with AJ, he put on a really good match with Seth. I gotta believe that the triple threat with all those three guys is gonna be really good.
Yeah, he has a serviceable match with Ambrose as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was kind of, even after everything went down on Sunday night with the title change and then watching Monday night, I don't know. I was already kind of thinking like, what's the future with this guy? I mean, I think the only future that he has would be as a heel.
Who's this guy?
I'm sorry, Roman Reigns. Okay. This guy over here. I'm kind of questioning everything about it, though, right? I mean, because it's like, I believe there's other people on that roster that have a lot more discrepancies when it comes to the wellness policy, and they're not getting pinched for it. I just, the conspiracy theorist in me is saying, like, well, is he like a deflection for other people that, people are kind of questioning. I mean, he's like their first I mean, Randy Orton is a big guy in terms of
the being big guy,
caught.
John.
Yeah, but in terms of being caught, right? But in terms of having being knee deep in a storyline, being your main event storyline, what this guy has been for the past year for this company. He's probably the highest profile guy to get pinched for a wellness policy. So I'm just kind of going like, you know, I don't know. I just think there's a lot that's going on that isn't really being reported on.
Are you saying that you believe that there's more, there's other wellness violators in there that didn't get popped?
Yes.
Is there anyone in particular you want to?
I don't want to say who it is because I have no proof.
Okay.
And being that I'm a journalist, you know, I'm not gonna.
You got to keep your journalistic integrity intact.
You know, but I mean, I think there. Let's just say there's a couple people. That are higher up in the chain.
Couple roiders.
That are higher up in the chain in terms of influence or importance to the company that I feel are, you can question whether they will pass the wellness policy. So I just kind of feel sometimes, I think it's like a lamb for the slaughter at the same time too. That's kind of like the bit first reaction that I have is like, I think, you know, he's a well-known guy and I think people have been protected in the past. How come they're not protecting him? And I just don't get it.
So a lot of the other speculation, and this one was coming from Meltzer. So whether you read that guy and like what he does or not, saying that that he had failed the test before the pay-per-view, and this is why he had to drop the belt, which is logical. That makes sense. I mean, I don't know what the finish was going to be anyway. I mean, I felt like there seemed like there was some momentum that it was going to be Ambrose on the cash-in. But, you know, I don't know if that was precipitated by them knowing that he was about to fail at wellness. But that's out there, too. And then they're playing
the whole thing. Like, it's 30 days of the wellness so he can come back for the pay-per-view. You know, I don't know. I mean, if you're going to have a wellness program, have a flipping wellness program, you know? I mean, if you tested positive before the pay-per-view, then pinch him before the pay-per-view. You know, it's just kind of a joke, you know, the wellness program.
It's flimsy, right?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, like they want to protect the business and continue to have the match. But then you know, then they want to take a stand afterwards and I'm also very curious, like what the storyline is going to be, because okay, if you've announced that you have this triple threat match as your pay per view, but Roman Reigns can't be there for the month of the build, like how do you explain that away? You know what I mean? Like everybody knows, right? I mean, obviously everybody knows what has actually transpired, but are they going to try to pretend that's not what it is? Like, how would they go about building this story?
Well, this is the first thing where I mean, when Randy Orton gets pinched for a wellness policy, I mean, it's kind of like the people that follow wrestling really kind of have to like follow it, you know, to really know what's going on. Like to the average fan, Randy Orton being gone for 2 months or whatever is because he's gone for 2 months. Like it's not a question. But when he was pinched for this wellness policy, it was just kind of like, oh no, you know, it's like, oh, okay. You know, it wasn't like this no big deal. Like Randy Orton didn't send a tweet out. I mean, Roman Reigns is coming out in front of this, sending a tweet out, and
do you think that's good or bad?
I don't know. I mean, it's funny because you know you look at kind of what the storyline is going to be, and I kind of look at the big picture with Roman Reigns, and I felt that the only avenue that he could have in terms of him being a legitimate draw. Would he would have to turn heel coming off of everything that happened after this pay-per-view, which was a great pay-per-view. Him coming out in front of it, I don't know if it's a good or bad thing. I mean, I think on a personal level, if you take out the business side of it in terms of storyline and everything like that, I think it's a great thing because he's coming out in front of it. But that's kind of how we are with Roman Reigns, right? Like you look at Roman Reigns and the first question we're asking is not, oh man, like how can you do this? The question is like, oh man, how's this going to affect his character, right? So, and I think there's some value into that as well, right? If that's the first thing that you're saying, and you don't like Roman Reigns, then you're invested in Roman Reigns. And so, for you to say that you don't like him, well, then it's one of those things where you don't like him, but you're still invested in him. And that's kind of where I am with this guy right now. It's like it's not a question of I don't know. See, wellness can mean anything, right? Like it could be Ephedrine. It can be like
be weed.
Whatever it is. I don't know if it's steroids, right? So until something's brought out about that to say what it is, then I don't know what it is. I mean, if for him to come out, if it was steroids, I don't think he would come out. If it was something else, if it was like a booster or like adrenaline or something like that, which is probably still kind of leads to steroids. But if it was like weed or drugs or, I mean, I don't think it's cocaine. I mean, I don't think he would come out if it was cocaine either. So I don't know what it's for. If it's good or if it's bad on his part, he's being a stand-up guy. But I'm going to give him more credit for coming out because he knows how much people hate him. And especially all the haters on Twitter are coming out. More than a couple of haters. You know, right. they're having a field day with this guy,
right.
And this guy, you know, put something out there to be an object of ridicule. But you know, he apologized to his family, to his friends, and to his fans. It's like, okay, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
And he basically said he did it, and that he was. You know, he wasn't going to run from it, which is...
And this is like the first chink in his armor, right? I mean, because like everything leading up to this point in terms of what Roman Reigns is, it was kind of this unabashed hate for no reason to not like Roman Reigns. It was kind of in vogue to dislike Roman Reigns, where he did everything that the company asked him to do. He has put on good matches, whether people like to admit it or not. And I wouldn't say he's carried the company, but he's carried the company as best as he could in the position that he's put in. And he's been a mainstay... He's been a mainstay, and I'll say this right now, and this is what, if there's nothing else that we can say and just kind of saying the same thing over and over. When Roman Reigns first burst onto the main event scene, has he left it better than what he got from in the beginning? Is the product better today after he's been in the main event scene for the past year and a half? And I would say overwhelmingly, it's a way better product than it's ever been. I'm not saying that he steered it, but he's allowed it to happen. And I think there's certain people that, when they're in the main event picture, they don't allow things to happen. He's allowed things to happen. There's bigger stars than Roman Reigns within the company right now. And I don't think you get that without having your somewhat top guy while John Cena has been gone. And Seth Rollins. While everybody's been gone, Roman Reigns has kind of been the top guy. And he's allowed other people to flourish. And he hasn't played any stupid backroom politicking, which has hurt the product in the past. So, you know what? Just coming from everything that's going on with that, you know what? Whatever the guy's done, get over. You know, whatever he's done, you know, learn how to deal with it, learn from your mistake, and then come back even stronger.
Yeah. No. I mean, yeah. I agree. I think. I don't have any big problem with it. I think overall people that follow, you know, sports a lot are pretty desensitized to, like, if it is steroids, right? Or even recreational drugs. Like, culturally, United States is, in a lot of places, like, going towards, legalizing some recreational drugs. And so I think there's a lot of people that this isn't, like, that big of a deal. Wrestling, even more specifically, I think because it's not real competition, right? So, like... I don't have a huge problem with wrestlers taking steroids. I'm not saying that's what it is, I don't know. But if that's what it is, I don't have a big problem with it. And if it's something like a recreational drug, again...
How come you don't have a big problem with it? I mean, if you have a wrestler that feels that they are... And I'm taking like a really kind of defeatist type of attitude with this, but... If there's a wrestler, it's kind of like the same argument with baseball, right? It's like, in order for me to keep on playing, in my profession, I need to take performance enhancing drugs because everybody else is. I need to keep up with them. I mean, I have a big problem with steroids in wrestling, and that's kind of the other problem I have with this whole side too is that I know there's other people in the WWE right now that's using steroids, and it's like, you know, I mean. And there's kind of been accusations in the past that some kind of get an easier test than other people. So that's the big problem that I have. And for you to say that you don't have a problem with it, with steroids and wrestling when you have all these kind of other secondary things, I mean, explain yourself a little bit to me. Because I have a huge problem with steroids and wrestling.
I have a bigger problem with it in like regular sports where there's true competition, where guys are like they're feeling like they're forced to take steroids to keep up.
And you don't think that's prevalent in wrestling?
I don't necessarily. Well, I'll come back to that. But then the other thing would be, you know, I'd have a problem if it were kind of like how it was in the 80s and people were being forced to take it, then I don't think that's right. But I think that steroids, I'm going to go sort of the Jose Canseco route a little bit here. And I think that, like, we know so much more about, like, steroids and some of their uses today than, like, 30, 40 years ago when people are just taking, like, animal steroids and all this stuff, to where I think that at some point, like, that they're probably going to be somewhat legal. Like, I think there's benefits. And the thing is, like, especially with professional wrestlers, sports entertainers, and they have no off season. And if they're, I can't say, you know, if they're using responsibly to kind of like maintain themselves because that's the grind, then, you know, I don't have a huge problem with it because, again, it's not, I just draw a distinction between this as sports entertainment and something as like pro football or pro baseball. It's a lot like Stallone takes roids to get, you know, yoked up for like Rocky or whatever, right? It's entertainment. He's doing what he's got to do. It walks the line between entertainment and sport. But I think for me, just because it's not true competition, then I don't have that huge problem with it.
Well, I think with the way here's a problem I have with your argument is that the guys that look chiseled and stuff, those are the guys that kind of get pigeonholed into going to the top pretty fast, and it's even kind of like a case like, you know, Triple H having a problem with CM Punk because he called him like, you know, muscular fat or something like that. So I mean,
skinny fat ass.
Skinny. Well, no, but there's an actual another term too. It's like, you know, like CM Punk was seen as too pudgy, even though he was the best wrestler in the company. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like his body type wasn't the right way. So, and the whole thing is like, you always talk about the look. Well, I'm sorry, but the whole thing is like, if you're going to be judged on the look that you have, I think a part of that look is the muscular chiseled look. You know, it's having the big arms. Like, you look at like Seth Rollins. I mean, look how big Seth Rollins' arms are, you know, as compared to the rest of his body. You know, it's like, that's a certain look. And I'm not saying anything bad about Seth Rollins. My whole thing is that, okay, you know, it's not competitive, but at the same time, you are judged on the way your body looks. And I think that lends to the fact of where, that leads to kind of what your decision is going to be. You know, it can be a responsible decision or it's not going to be a responsible decision. But the whole time, right now, steroids is illegal. Okay, they don't have classes on how to take steroids. There's no class, like, how do you take steroids? There's no responsible steroid taking class. So you, as a wrestler, you have to be lucky to find some person that knows how to use steroids and use it healthily. And I don't think you can get that on the road. I don't think you can get that with the cronies that you have in the WWE working for you in terms of doctors, whatever it is, because they can't do that, right? They can't promote using steroids. Can steroids be healing? Yes. I mean, a lot of times when you go to the hospital and your kid has a fever or a flu or whatever it is, there's steroids in the medicine. And they tell you, like, there's steroids in the medicine, but this is what it helps for. What I'm saying is that, yeah, it's nice. It's if you put it, paint a nice picture of it and say, like, as long as you use it responsibly, but I'm telling you right now that that's perception. There's also the reality. And I'm going to err on the side of reality being reality of a bunch of dumb people taking steroids, abusing them. And the system that put that in place is still prevalent. We're saying that you need to have the look. You need to have the look. And if you don't get the look, you'll never be a world champion. And if you're a wrestler and you don't want to be the world champion, then you shouldn't be a wrestler. That's the culture that these guys are going through. I don't know what's going on in terms of what Roman Reigns is. I don't think this has nothing to do with Roman Reigns. But I think there's a definitive problem with steroids use in general. If it's used the way that you said it's used, by all means, go for it, right? Because steroids does have a lot of benefits. But there hasn't been a 20 or 30 year or 40 year test subject that has used steroids in a conservative way for health reasons for us to determine that. So that's the big problem that I have, you know, across the board. And then when I have to see certain wrestlers lumbering about that don't look healthy and they look like big oafs in the ring because of something that they might be taking, that affects me as a viewer. That affects me in terms of my entertainment value, and I'd rather just see athletic competition in terms of what wrestling is, because wrestling is an athletic competition. There's a lot of factors. Is it a sport? No, it's not. But you have to be good on the mic. You have to be good on the ring, and you have to have the psyche to get over when you can't get over. So it is a sport. You do have to work hard on it. And I feel that taking steroids is an easy way out. I saw that in the late 80s. I saw that in the early 90s. It was a bad product, and now it's a good product because of for the most part, it's going back to the athleticism of what it was before.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. But I think, and I probably didn't say it as well. But like,
well, what you're saying is the wrong thing to say, right? So I mean,
could be, but,
no, but no, but, I think, but what I'm saying is I'm commending you for saying it because a lot of people wouldn't
right,
say it.
But what I'm saying, and to what you just said, right? So like back in like the 80s, and you know. Whenever you were talking steroids, like you were talking just like gaining mass, right? It was just pure like bulk, right? But as we've seen through sport more recently, like a lot of these guys that are taking, whether it's a steroid or not exactly something similar to a steroid, a human growth hormone or whatever, like they're not necessarily packing on muscle anymore, right? It's like a maintenance thing, right? Mm-hmm. To the grind of like 162. Game baseball season, right? And so like I, cause you know, I don't look at Roman Reigns and think, oh, that like that guy's a roider, right? I mean, if he, I'm not saying like definitively he isn't, right? But like I look at a guy, I'll say a name, not saying that he is on steroids, but like has the look of one that could be, is somebody like Ryback, right? Where it looks like they just packed on a bunch of muscle, but they're not a smooth athlete, they can't move around and things like that. So you know, Roman Reigns is still a very fluid athlete, and so like, you know, I don't think, well, I wouldn't think that he's necessarily like, if he's doing something along those lines, doing it to try to get big. I think he's naturally big person as it is, but if it's something to like, I gotta maintain like not to not get mass, but I gotta maintain my health so I can recover and go out on the road 200 whatever days it is, like that's something that I can more understand. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying personally, I don't have as much.
If you had that grind, would you take steroids in that type of fashion?
I think I would if I knew that like it was safe. See, I don't know. I probably wouldn't, like, my nature, I probably wouldn't, just because it was against the rules.
Mm-hmm.
But rules not being what they were, or maybe, like, if I was a guy that, like, I was on the fringes of employment, and I thought that's what I was going to need to do to stay employed, then I could see probably doing it if I thought it was healthy, right? Like, I think the stuff that, like the bodybuilders and whatnot were doing in the 70s and the 80s, I don't think I would ever get involved with, because those are people, like, you know, they're shutting down all their internal organs and things like that.
Enlarging your heart,
yeah,
and stuff.
And I think that there's been so much improvement in what steroids is over the last 20 years or so, that I think that there is a safe manner in which it can be done.
Can Roman Reigns come back from this? And here's the thing, is like we're talking about Roman Reigns and we start talking about something else. So I appreciate the conversation, you know, and I know you, what I was trying to say is that you are saying the wrong thing, because it's very easy for us to like, oh, you shouldn't do it, right? But I'm not saying that you're wrong. I mean, it's very hard to kind of come out on a stand like that and be honest about it. So, you know, you're put on the spot, you know, you're struggling a little bit with it, you know, but at the same time, it's like, I think there's something to be said with what you're saying, so I commend you for that. And you're still wrong, but I still not. But
I could be, but, but, and the other thing, this is just kind of where the conversation went. We don't know, and we're not saying that steroids is what it was, just like as a speculative thing in terms of a talking point.
So here's the thing, though. So when I heard this happen, it's like, okay, so now, like, all of the pundits against Roman Reigns, they have their fuel for the fire they have against this guy. Can he? I mean, he's going to come back. Can he come back? And is he ever going to be? I mean, because I kind of felt after this whole thing that the Roman Reigns experiment is done, right? I don't think he's going to be a main event guy anymore. I felt that he wasn't going to be what he was seen as before. And I don't think that WWE has enough guts to make him a monster heel and make him kind of like the leader of a faction or just be a heel, because he can't carry being a heel. He needs someone, right? He needs to be, I think it's been kind of proven that Roman Reigns can't do it on his own. He needs to have a couple guys with him and have him get pushed to the top. I was kind of looking forward to the Shield reuniting just because then I could see the old Roman Reigns. But can he come back from this? And do you think he'll ever be in the main event of picture again?
Yeah, I think so. I think he'll come back. I do agree with a couple of things you're saying. I think at some point they're going to have to make this guy heal and see how far he can run with being a heel. I'm not saying that absolutely has to happen right away, but I think at some point for him to get to reach his potential, I think he needs to turn heel, and then after he goes through being a heel for a while, come back and be a babyface, and I think he would be over. But the other thing too is, yeah, I actually, when I was watching Raw last night and kind of seeing just kind of the interaction between the three, and even a little bit at the pay-per-view, like, you can even almost see this triple threat feud as a vehicle to put the Shield back together again. And I think that would be really interesting television also. So, yeah, I think those are two ways that he can make it back to the top. They're in the Shield, I don't know that he's going to be main eventing as a singles guy. But I think that at some point, there's a big heel run in him that they need to explore. And whether if this incident becomes a vehicle for that, then maybe it can end up turning a negative into a positive.
Should the WWE come out and say that he's been suspended? I mean, or should they put it under the rug? What's the best way to approach it with this guy?
That's a really good question. I feel that they should probably just address it, because he's already addressed it, and the time of kayfabe is over. Everybody, you know, within what, an hour of that news breaking, like everybody knows, right? So I think that they should just come out with it. I don't know about what you say about in terms of what the actual violation is, if you even say specifically what it is, but I think you do that, and then it can go either one of two ways.
Usually with the testing, it's confidential unless the unless the person, you know, comes out and says what it is. But I think it's up to Roman Reigns to say what it was.
Right. So I mean, I think you can. You know, I think I'm gonna go on a tangent real quick, okay? And I'll come back. So I slept like real early, and I woke up at midnight last night, and then I was up. Like, I watched Raw, and then I decided to watch like Stone Cold podcast. And when I was done, I decided, okay, let me see what else is on the network, stuff I haven't seen before. And I checked the rivalries, right? And they had the rivalry of Edge and Matt Hardy, which was, that was a really good show, by the way. Like, about 50 minutes, a really good documentary.
I've seen it.
And like, not to go into the details of it, because I think it's really interesting. I knew a lot of it, but I think it's a really interesting subject. But I think what my takeaway overall was like, the reality of what had happened is what made it a compelling feud. Because Matt Hardy was kind of a...
We don't have to get into it.
Right. I mean, well, yeah. I'm saying he was kind of a floundering character. Yeah. And like, sometimes a real story rather than something that's completely fabricated, right? And I think this is an opportunity to maybe take something that's really happened, because it's the same thing everybody knows about. That's why the Hardy and Edge thing became as big as it was, because people on the internet found out.
But I think it's a... I think... First of all, I think there's a problem with Roman Reigns when you look at what just happened right now with him failing the wellness policy and thinking like, oh, this could be a good storyline for him. And I'm not saying that you're the only one that's saying that, and I'm not saying that you're doing that 100%. The difference is, though, is that with Matt, you had a love triangle with Matt, Lita, and Edge. This is like taking drugs, and it's kind of, and I kind of see it as kind of like the same thing of when Jericho had his feud with CM Punk, and he was saying that his father was an alcoholic and his sister was on drugs. I think it's a different. I don't think it would resonate as much with the fans of going like, you know, because I think they'd pick the wrong person to do it. You know, they would pick the wrong antagonist to do it.
Well, I think the difference is like with Jericho, it's like you're airing someone else's dirty laundry, right? But with Reigns, it would be.
But do you think like someone like so the antagonist going like, oh yeah, you know you're doing drugs and. And you wave like a bunch of steroids in front of them.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that Reign should I think he could go like one of a couple ways. One is like, I mean, I don't want him to come off like super corny like John Cena, but like as a guy that like, you know, that messed up and then he owned up to it and now he's coming back and like he's gonna try to. Like, if you're extending, like, a babyface run, he's, like, he owns up to what he's done, and he's going to try to make amends. But you could also use it as, like...
Don't you see this as a problem, though? I mean, did you have, like, a problem at the core of what you're just talking about right now when it comes to the character of Roman Reigns and him using it to try to get over? Like, you know what I'm saying? I mean, because it's hard for us to talk about it because we already like watching Roman Reigns, right? Like, we don't dislike Roman Reigns, but, you know, it's like, but I don't know, I just kind of feel like we're grasping at straws to get this guy finally over that I don't think he ever will be, right?
I don't think so. I think he can get over. I don't know, you're saying should or shouldn't he? I guess in the state that WWE is in these days, like, that's probably kind of a no-no. But I guess my frame of reference is more of something that they would have used to their advantage 15, 10, 20 years ago.
It's just becoming a big old mess, isn't it? I mean...
Well, I don't know that I have a problem with doing that, because the thing is, it's not a secret, right? So it's like... Everybody knows.
But I'm not talking about the problem of like of him using that, right? Like, I don't care if he uses it or not. All I'm saying is like it seems funny to me that we're having this conversation of him getting pitched for a wellness policy, and then we go like, well, can he use this to like get over with the fans? You know what I'm saying? And it's like I think that's the problem that I have. It's like, if you got it, you got it. If you don't, then why waste my time?
I think if you got to use what you have, and mm-hmm. I think that, I mean. We've always said that, like, what makes the best characters are when they're, like, an extension of themselves turned up a few levels. I'm not saying, like, that he should define himself as a steroid user or a drug addict or whatever. Yeah. But I'm saying, like, I think, like, for me, and it goes into more, like, I'm saying I think that he should be having this heel turn. Is, like, he can accept it and say, like, you know, I'll do whatever the hell that I need to do. Yeah. Like, to improve my spot.
Here's the problem that I have with Roman Reigns, right? It's like, I don't know if you amp up his true character by 10 or 15%, whether he's a viable character. That's the only thing. It's like, yeah, you can say that about guys like The Rock, guys like CM Punk, maybe even like Mark Henry doing like it during his Monster Heel run. I mean, like certain guys, you know, Edge, like certain guys that got over as extensions of themselves. It's because they're charismatic, right? They're charismatic people. I don't know if Roman Reigns is charismatic in that same ilk. He's charismatic if he's quiet and the way he was with the Shield, very, very charismatic. But if you try to make him someone that he's not, and I think he's burned so many bridges by trying to be something that he's not, he finally kind of got into a mode where you accept him for who he was. Like, even like on Monday Night Raw when they say you can't wrestle, and I'm sitting going like, come on, you got to be flipping kidding me. After the matches that he just had, and he's able to kind of, he was able to talk back to these guys, right? So then I felt that he slowly started to define his character, and maybe you're right. You know, he started to find out who he was. Then this happens. So maybe the way it is to go. Yeah. Maybe you are right. Maybe I'm wrong.
Because I'm saying, you know, and when, like, if you boil down what you just said, right? Like the charisma that he had when it shined best was when he was in the Shield. And what was he when he was in the Shield? He was a heel. And I think I think that's the way to go for the guy. If you can't figure out, if you've tried like everything you had. You have to get this guy over as a baby face, and it's out of character for him. Let him do what he does. Like we're talking about when he was the gray area Roman Reigns, that was pretty good for a while. As a heel, if that's the way he is, like, yeah, I think he's a less is more on the mic kind of guy, but he has that charisma in the ring. I think his best move would be to say, you know, screw all you guys and just go on a heel run. Yeah. And go ahead and let Seth Rollins have a babyface run. I think he could have a great babyface run. I mean, I think he's great as a heel. Don't get me wrong there, but I think he could have a very good babyface run too. I think people want to like Seth Rollins. People were cheering big for the return of Seth Rollins, mm-hmm. even as he's coming out insulting their cities. Right? They boo him for 5 seconds, and then they're back to cheering him. So I mean, it can all be done. Let him reverse roles and see what happens.
Okay.
What do you think about Dean Ambrose as WWE World Heavyweight Champion?
I think it's really good. Okay, yeah. Next one. No. I think he's. I think he's going to be exposed a little bit. I think. Was it the right move? Here's the thing. So Sunday you have Game 7 of the NBA Finals, and for some reason in my household, that game was not played. Like everywhere else, it was played, but for some reason. The game didn't happen in my house. I don't understand why. And everybody's telling me that the Warriors lost. I'm like, dude, Game 7 hasn't happened yet. You had Game 7, you had Game of Thrones, and you had WWE.
That's like the Holy Trinity for us right there.
Well, but here's the thing. Like, so I would have to say that the pay-per-view was right up there with all those three major events. Like, it wasn't like a secondary event. Like, they did a lot of stuff in that pay-per-view. I think Dean Ambrose winning the title was like a what the hell moment, and I was gonna watch it anyways after everything. But then the second that I saw that he won, I watched it that night, and I was gonna watch like part of it, you know, or I was probably just gonna skip around. But it made me watch the whole card to see, okay, is this one of the best pay-per-views, quote unquote pay-per-views, since they don't have pay-per-views anymore, that they've had outside of the big, you know, the big four, and I thought this pay-per-view was one of the better pay-per-views that I saw. There wasn't really a bad match. I think the Divas match wasn't all that great shakes.
There were two or three matches.
Yeah, Corbin. Yeah, Corbin and Ziggler really, and then Rusev. Rusev and Titus. Yeah. But I mean, in terms of storyline, I'm gonna let you finish. I'm talking right now. Yeah. I thought it was the right thing to do at the right time. The Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns match was a really strong match. And then Ambrose coming in and winning the title didn't bother me at all. It was a natural progression. It's like, it's what people have asked for every single pay-per-view or after every Money in the Bank. I thought it was done really well. I would have liked to probably see Dean get a bigger upper hand on Seth Rollins, you know, like to kind of like maybe beat him up a little bit more or just do something. Where it kind of, you know, it just the payoff, I don't think, in terms of like the actual match itself, wasn't as good as it could have been. But at the time, you know, they're running out of time, so I'll take it. I watched the Monday Night Raw. I just don't care for Ambrose's character, and it has nothing. It has some of it has to do with him, but it's the way that he's presented. It's the way that he's talked about with the announced team. Him being on the mic at the end, you know, while the match is going on, I just thought it's really dumb, dude. It's just you know, that if that's your character, you know, you better start
figuring out what, how else you can expand his character, because his character is just kind of, it's a one-sided character. You know, they give this guy a promo spot right before the show even starts with the taxi, you know, cab driver and stuff like that. It's just like, I don't know, dude. The rooster has come home to roost, or whatever it is. You know, the chickens have come home to roost, because this is what you want and this is what you're going to get, and I don't think you're going to be too happy with it. I think it's a pretty one-dimensional character.
Do you think the fans will be smart enough to realize that it isn't working if it's not working?
No, because I think the fans are going to like whoever they want to like. I mean, hell, like, you look at that John Cena match, you know, both of those John Cena matches, and how everybody's cheering for John Cena is like, well, I don't know what the hell you're watching, but the match that I'm watching is pretty bad. I mean, AJ Styles is having a match with a pogo stick, you know, and that's pretty much how that match was, and the fans are.
Was it a good match though?
I thought it was terrible.
That was terrible.
I thought it was a terrible match.
Why is that?
It just because AJ Styles is doing all the work himself. You know, I mean, was the drama of the match good? Yeah, but I mean, the guy John Cena is a lumbering fucking oaf. I mean, he is terrible. He is terrible in the ring. He's even worse now than he was before, and it's. His storytelling is the same storytelling all the time. It's like Superman this, Superman that. I thought it was a really bad match, and I thought the match on Raw was even worse. I mean, he's just
I got a bunch of problems with the match on Raw.
We're still talking about Ambrose, right?
Well, we could be. Let's see, I think I'm probably aligned along the lines with you on Ambrose. I had no problem with the cash-in. I thought it fit what was going on. But long-term, I don't think that Ambrose is going to be a good world champion. Maybe it's not even a long-term. It could be a transitional thing. Symbolically, I'm okay with it in that they got somebody else into the world title picture. Mm-hmm.
I'm all for that. Right. I'm all for him winning it. I have no problem with it.
But that's not the guy that it should be. Like, and I know they had other storylines going on, obviously, but I'd much rather see AJ Styles win that title and do something with it. Because the thing I fear is, like, they have a very limited amount of times that they give a title run to somebody new. And, like, now that they give this title run to Ambrose, there's probably not going to, when he drops the title, it's going to be to the same 3-4 guys. It's going to be Reigns or Rollins or Cena, and some of these other guys that I think are pushing through and are just flat out all around better performers than Dean Ambrose is. If this Dean Ambrose thing doesn't work, then it's more, I'm afraid it's more ammunition to say we need to keep it with these couple 3 guys.
And let's roll out Triple H when we can.
Right, and Brock Lesnar if Brock comes back. So yeah, that's the thing that I don't like. But symbolically, I do like that they gave it to somebody that they made a new champion.
Mm. Yeah,
see what he can do.
I have no problem.
I'm open minded to Dean Ambrose.
Yeah,
I don't think he's that good. I don't hate him.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of problems with his character, which you know I can agree with. But I think I have a bigger problem with what he does in the ring at this point than even his character.
I don't see how
he can be questionable on both of those things and be your world champion.
Yeah, if he was better in the ring, right? If he was better in the ring, then I'd be all for it, right? It's kind of like I kind of want to like look at like Enzo and Kaz, right? Like Enzo and Kaz, like really a lot of charisma, you know, and there's probably their shtick probably runs certain people the wrong way, right? Like maybe what Enzo does isn't the style of what. You know, of what people that like Dean Ambrose does, right? Maybe it runs the wrong way. But the difference is that Enzo and Kaz are very entertaining in the ring. I mean, they're good hands in the ring. They're limited in what they do. Same thing with Dean Ambrose. Both of them are, you know, all these three guys are very limited in what they do. But it's more believable and it's more, to me, it's more athletic with Enzo and Kaz than, say, with like a Dean Ambrose. And here's the thing, like, Dean's like DDT that, Michael Cole mispronounced
as called the pedigree.
Against Roman Reigns. That was that was probably the best DDTs I've ever seen him do. So certain things that he does, you know, it's not that I have a problem with Dean Ambrose. I do have a problem with Dean Ambrose, but at the same time, it's like I see the potential that this guy has. It's like I want to like this guy, and I think that he's fallen into a trap of what this character is supposed to be, and I think he's limiting himself in terms of what he can do. And then when you have matches where your signature moves are very low impact and they're just kind of just like run of the mill things, and you don't improve upon that, like I don't see any improvement with him in the ring, right? And you take a guy like The Rock, where The Rock at the height when he was just like at his crescendo of being a superstar, the thing is that a lot of people would bag what he did in the ring. And he tried to do a lot of different things in the ring. Like, he tried to do a lot of new things. He expanded his repertoire. But he wasn't really good at it, but he was trying to do it, right? And so I can respect that. With Dean Ambrose, it's like, you're doing the same things over and over again. He was a better wrestler when he first came into the WWE on the main roster than he is now. And that's the biggest problem that I have. And then when you add to the point of his kind of gimmick is kind of stayed. I mean, it's like it's just, you know, like the way he talks and stuff, it's just, he sounds stupid. And I think it's magnified to the point because since he hasn't been improving in the ring, why am I going to, you know, your character is, you know, you have flaws in the ring, you have some flaws on the mic. I think you can be really good on the mic, but it's an easy way out for him. He's so much better than what he is, right? That I feel he's just getting hampered. I think that's the main problem I have with Dean Ambrose. It's not what he does. I just feel that he is not, he can offer a lot more. He's not given the opportunity, or it's easier for him to be successful in that company by being what they want him to be.
Yeah, he's not getting better is the problem. I think there's a few kind of would seem like simple things that he might be able to do to improve upon what he does in the ring. But like, let me see, like the thing, like, so you're talking about Enzo and Kaz, right? So let's say that they're kind of limited in the ring, right? Okay, a couple things. One, they complement each other. But two, if they are limited in the ring a little bit, then their ability on the mic overcompensates for that. And I think what I'm seeing with Dean is he sounds, if you don't know what you're really listening for, like, he can sound good on the mic just in that everything he says, like, he pretty much says it with conviction, but it's really pretty bland. So for me, he's pretty mediocre on the mic right now, even though I think he presents himself like he's good on the mic, if that makes any sense. But then in the ring, like, he's mediocre as well. And I think that's where the problem, like, if I look at AJ Styles, I still think he's pretty, I think he's getting better on the mic, but he's barely above mediocre. But he is so good in the ring that I'm fine with him.
I think, and I think that's a perfect comparison. AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose a year and a half ago, who do you like better? Well, I like Dean Ambrose better.
Right.
AJ Styles sucks, right? And then even like I feel like in New Japan, he was. I did not think that AJ Styles would transition as well as he has. He is so good in the ring. I mean, he's not like so good in the ring, but he's an old field general that they're not used to having. He is a veteran that can wrestle with conviction, as say maybe a Chris Jericho can anymore, just due to his age. I mean, Chris Jericho is very good in the ring, but he can't do what he used to do before, and you notice that. Where AJ Styles is kind of towards the end of his prime. He's still in his prime, but he's tailing off. But the whole thing is, he's so good there. When he gets on the mic, I have no problem with anything he does on the mic. I'm not sitting there and going, and here's the difference, is like, I'm not sitting there looking at AJ Styles and going like, well, is he going to kill on the mic? Is he going to kill on the mic tonight? Because if he doesn't, then he's never going to get anywhere, right? Where with Dean Ambrose, I'm doing that. With Roman Reigns, I'm definitely doing that. He is his own, he knows what his person is. He knows what his match is. He knows what he is on the mic. And I actually think he's gotten a whole lot better on the mic. I have no problem with AJ Styles on the mic. With Dean, I mean, if you listen back to his commentary, you know, it's like a lot of cliches that don't really work. They're not funny. They're not inventive. And it's just, you know, he is, I will give him credit that he knows what his character is and he plays it very well. But I think he's resting on his laurels because when he was doing this stuff in the Shield with more conviction and without trying to be funny, and it was a whole lot better. Like, he was crazy in the Shield, and it wasn't like he was crazy and he was a lunatic and that's the role he had to play. He was just out there, and it worked. It worked for that group. He's trying to take that same type of character and mainstream it and make it more viable and more like funnier, and it just isn't working. It's falling flat.
Yeah. All right. Agree.
Agree.
We done on that?
If you're done on it.
I'm done. All right. So
now I'm done.
Do you want to? So, all right. Let me go to the match on Raw that John Cena and Carl Anderson match, if I can even call it that. Okay. I just don't understand, like, how you can, you know, you're building this feud. You got these two new guys in Gallows and Guns. They really, I felt they should have won the titles at Money in the Bank. I like New Day, I got no problem, but I felt like that was time. Was the team that should do it. And then you want to go ahead and put John Cena in a match with Carl Anderson. You want to have John Cena win. Go right ahead, okay? But I don't see how in the hell you can do a straight squash match and have Carl Anderson trying to get beat in about 3 minutes. He had literally zero offense. He didn't land a punch. He didn't do anything. Okay? Like, what are you guys doing, dude? Is John Cena that hard up for some attention that he can't even sell a punch? He can't. I mean, why do you want to make Carl Anderson look that bad? It's like you can have him lose a match. You know, he's a tag team guy fighting against someone that's a singles wrestler. I'm fine, whatever. But the way that match was carried out was just garbage.
Because they can't have, you know, Macho Man used to say the cream rises to the top. Well, the cream hasn't risen to the top in a long time, especially when you have dealings with John Cena. You have that match with John Cena. Take a look at what Carl Anderson did with New Japan against Tanahashi, against Nakamura, against Okada, and look at his win loss record with those guys, right? I mean, he's probably batting 500 against these guys. And what did that do for Carl Anderson, right? Did it put Carl Anderson straight to the moon? Was he now the main guy of New Japan? No, he wasn't. But everything that he said, it gave credence to what he said.
He was viable every time.
Exactly. Did it hurt Tanahashi? Does it hurt Nakamura? Does it hurt Okada? No. The only thing that hurt was that maybe they said the match that he had with Nakamura was way better than the match he had with Tanahashi. Right? Here's the whole thing is that, like, you know, John Cena is supposed to be like your guy, right? He hasn't been in the main event picture for about 2 years. So, you know what? Yeah, he does have to squash people because he doesn't flip and get it, right? How come you don't have a match with John Cena and Carl Anderson? And how come John Cena's not saying, you know what, let's steal the damn show. Let's steal the show. But instead, what does he have to do? He has to pump himself up, just like he's pumped himself up during his time off. The match that he had with AJ Styles was a terrible match. It was a horrible match. It was watching AJ Styles with a tackling dummy. That's all it was, right? Like, when I used to have, like, these big pillows that I bought at the flea market, I had the exact same match, you know, when I was, like, 8 years old, because I had a personal tackling dummy that could take a flip and hit. He is terrible in the ring. He is worse than he was before. He runs the same spots every single time. And for anybody to say, for JBL said that was a great match, the only reason why it was a great match was because he was throwing AJ Styles a flipping bone. And he allowed AJ Styles to run the match. John Cena is terrible. I mean, he is terrible, especially after all the wrestling that we have seen with New Japan, with him being gone, with NXT. For him to come back to have that same stupid-ass match that he always does, and for us to sit there and go like, oh my God, John Cena, you know what? You can allow someone to make you look good. Wow. You can let the other wrestler make you look good. You are such a great wrestler. I'm sick and tired of this guy. And to even throw it on with the whole thing with Raw, it's the exact same thing. He doesn't put anybody over. He doesn't know how to steal a show. He does not know how to be a professional wrestler. John Cena is the shits. How about that?
How do you really feel that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It needs to be said, dude. I haven't talked bad about. I have been giving John Cena the benefit of the doubt for the past year and a half. I'm going to finally say the way that I want to say it. And you know what the whole thing is he looks like a flipping ape in the ring. I mean, he looks like Donkey Kong in the ring. His arms are his knuckles are rubbing up against the floor because he can't move in the ring anymore. He's just terrible, dude. He's not good.
He's not good. I did probably because I was enjoying watching what AJ Styles was doing. So I don't disagree that AJ Styles carried that match, but I still enjoyed seeing it. I did, because I thought AJ Styles came out looking really good in that match. I did, and I don't understand why
he did look good in that match, right? And I enjoyed it too, yeah. but I didn't enjoy the last 4 minutes
right.
of that match.
Right. Well, that's the thing. It's like,
and it had nothing to do with these guys running out. I didn't finish this because I knew he was, you know, okay. Now it's time for John Cena's great comeback.
That's
when he hasn't built it up in the first place.
Yeah, and that's where I had a problem. And I didn't understand why JBL was all upset with them, because that's usually what JBL always cheers for, right? So I don't know why he was mad that the club came and interfered. That's pretty much JBL's MO all the time. But I did have a problem with the finish, because if kind of history has shown, if ever anyone's going to win a match in a feud with John Cena, it's the first one, so John Cena can come back and squash him 5 times. So now they basically robbed AJ, because that's probably the only win he's going to get in this feud, and they robbed him of having a legitimate win, which he deserved. Like, and half the match was, so here's the two halves of the match, right? Was AJ Styles running all his offense and selling John Cena's weak offense, and the other half of it was John Cena trying to put someone in AA. That's all he does, is just stand there like hunched over with one arm extended, waiting to try to pick somebody up, and AJ just elbowed his way out of it probably like 7-8 times. But it's just like, that's all you got? Like, you got all, you guys, some weak shoulder tackle and the weakest STF I've ever seen, and then keep trying, and then a punch that you pick your hand up and you hold it there for 5 seconds before you throw, and then trying to put someone in the AA that's a really weak AA to begin with.
If you knew that you were facing an opponent that has had 5-star matches, 4 to 5-star matches pretty much every time that he wrestled in New Japan at a main event, and wouldn't you watch those matches, and wouldn't you go, okay, what am I good at? How can, you know, this guy has wrestled people way better than I am, right? And instead of him coming down to my level and having a match by himself, I mean, wouldn't you, as like a competitor, if you wanted to be the best, like someone likes to say he is the best, or wants to be the best, and that's why he's here, to be the best, to fight for you, wouldn't you want to like find out what you're actually good at, and to show, to have a different way, to have a match with someone that actually knows how to wrestle and has wrestled people way better than you? But we're going to sit here and jump up and down when this guy says that, you know, I want to be the best. Well, if you want to be the best, here's something that's even more funny, right? About 2-3 months ago, okay, I was looking at like a DVD release of all the WWE DVDs they're going to release, right? One of them is actually how John Cena became a great talker, or like John Cena, the master of like the promo. There's actually a DVD that's going to come out and say that. And that's the whole problem that I have with this guy. It's like, so what was he? Was he Scarface Cena on Monday? All I have in this role is my balls and my word, really? So that's supposed to impress me because Al Pacino said that 30 years ago?
And Razor Ramon was using it 25 years ago?
Yeah, and I'm supposed to jump up and down because you know how to bite off someone else?
Well,
and not only that, but you're supposed to be like this big like kid type figure, right? And you start talking about your balls?
Yeah.
And how am I going to explain that to the 6 to 12-year-old demographic that, you know, which is like the big, like, kind of, oh, he brings in those kids, but constantly over and over again, he says stuff that those kids should not hear, like, but that's his contingent.
Like the Pull It Club?
Yeah. Or how about the Circle Jerk Club? I mean, that's like the whole thing, right? It's like, this guy gets such a free flipping pass, and he doesn't get questioned on anything he does, and what's, oh, well, he's John Cena. Yeah, he's John Cena, and he sucks.
Yeah, and he doesn't even do it well.
Well, I think he does suck very well.
No, but I think when he gets the
and I think he sucks in office very well too. He sucks well in the ring. There's only two places that he sucks really well in. One's in the ring, and one's in Vince McMahon's office. Because I don't know how this guy has stayed up on top, and you had this whole stupid machine behind this guy. You know why wrestling is never going to be taken seriously? Because of jackasses like him. There we go. Where's my mic? I'm just going to drop it right now, dude.
If I could put up a hot fire emoji. Oh yeah, producer.
Yeah.
Put up some hot fire emojis right at that spot at 59 minutes and 45 seconds.
Yeah. So and I'm gonna lay off that for a while, but
yeah, that was like a good wrestling match. It had a slow build, built up to a crescendo.
Yeah.
And then the finish.
I got all my shit in.
Got your shit
in. Yeah. And then I just did a muscle buster off the second rope.
Yeah.
So I haven't watched NXT yet, but I did see I have to start watching because of Nakamura and Balor and them teaming up. That's gonna be some good stuff right there.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and talk about the Warriors. No. let's go ahead and talk about Game of Thrones because we're hitting up to an hour. Real fast. Looking really forward to that draft. Kind of be interested to see
the raw draft.
Yeah. New Day. You know, as much as I felt they should have lost, New Day has been solid as ever. Good return of the Wyatt family, and then Enzo and Cass. I mean, that's I think those are the guys that those are going to be kind of like my guys for a while for me to kind of root for. I'm kind of concerned that they're talking about how
great of teams are going to get split up.
Yeah, well, and that might happen, but they shouldn't split those two guys up because they haven't even touched the surface of what's going to happen. My kind of thing is that I think they're going to push Kaz a little bit too fast, to be a singles guy, and I think right now your money is with these two guys being together. But WWE has screwed us over in the past, and we'll see how that goes. But I will say it's funny that, and this is kind of like the same thing that I'm talking about, Riley. Like Kaz is getting all the attention right now, and this is just how messed up the main roster is, right? It's like Kaz is getting all the attention, okay? But he would never gotten a whiff of anything if it wasn't for Enzo's work in NXT and Enzo's work that he's doing now. Kaz can be fine on his own, but Enzo's the money where it's at right now.
I liked Enzo's Zero Dimes shirt too.
Yeah,
that was the Zero Dimes baseball shirt. That's nice. And then I'll also add in. I thought that the Money in the Bank ladder match was pretty good. Guys put it out on the line for sure. Del Rio was doing a lot of work in there, man. So I hope he's sound like he went to the hospital. I hope he's not hurt too badly.
And the other thing too is we got treated to a Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn match on Raw, and I'm sort of going like, this is like a main event match in NXT, and I'm getting to watch it on Raw as like the first match. So
it really wasn't much of a match, but I think I'm glad that, like, because that's another slow build too, right?
Yeah.
That's a feud that you've been thinking was going to happen for about a year and a half now, and
it was still a good match to watch, though. Yeah. I mean, was it their best match? No.
Well, I don't even think it was much of a match. I mean, it just kind of broke. It went into a Donnybrook, but I think that it
a Ballybahoo.
Yeah, but I think it builds the feud, right? Yeah. I think we're now to the point. It's been like teasing this feud for so long. And having them around the Money in the Bank or around the Intercontinental or whatever, but I think that now, like, you can kind of pencil those guys in for the next pay per view to have a legitimate match, and I think it'll be a good match because those guys have a really good chemistry, and I would really hope that down the line, like, they bury the hatchet and they become a tag team because I think they could be a really good tag team.
Yeah.
But that, let them have their single runs first. But yes, all right. You go. You go. I started. I started on the wrestling business.
Yeah, so. but you're the MC. You're the MC. better have my donuts D.
I thought it was a great episode.
Okay. If you're the first thing you're going to say is a great episode, then let me go ahead.
Okay, there you go.
I thought it was a great episode. Really, really.
I was the that's really like the. I watched that one like twice, like back to back, pretty much.
Saw the episode twice and rewound it and saw it again.
I watched it. After, after I watched the Warriors game,
what is this game you're talking about?
The next morning,
Game 7 hasn't happened yet.
Then the next morning, I got up and I watched it one more time.
A game. I haven't erased it, so right. It's like, so you had a big, fight. You had two big fights, right? I mean, every other time they had like something big happen or a major battle, you're like rooting for the better of the bad. Right, like it hasn't been like the, you had like the big, you had the big battle at King's,
Landing?
King's Landing, right? But it was like Lannisters versus like the brothers of the Baratheons and stuff. So you really didn't care, mm-hmm. Like you were kind of rooting for Tyrion, but who are you really rooting for, right? So this one, you actually had like, right, Starks, right? Like finally, like Starks are going to get their comeuppance, right? And the whole thing is that there's only one more season left after this, right? I thought, even though a lot of people are saying like the effects for when
two other dragons came out of the wall. When those two dragons came out, I marked out, right? Because it's finally like these two dragons aren't cooped up anymore, and now she has all three of her dragons, and it just shows what she can do. And on top of that, she also has the Dothraki coming in, so she has them backing up too. It's a good setup, that first part. I mean, the problem is like you're watching the first part of this episode, but you know that there's going to be the Battle of Winterfell. So it's like, you're just kind of like, you're happy with what's going on. You're not really invested in it though. Like, cause when they come out Tyrion and the Queen of Dragons, the First Unborn, the Set of the Unsaid, the Sand of the Sand, when they start doing the negotiations, you know, and you think they're going to surrender and stuff, right? And they're like, oh, you know, like, well, we're not surrendering. It's like, well, I've seen that before. It was still a nice little kind of, I'm like, okay, all right, now it's going to get down, right? But like, you know, like she just has the winning hand every single time. So it wasn't that big of a surprise. It was still really fun to watch. And there's also been like people saying like, well, you know, like she's always the victor. Well, you guys are kind of forgetting that like in the first kind of like, the first like three seasons she wasn't, and yeah. Now she's finally building her power base. So
her brother was just like beating her up and treating her like shit the whole way through. I don't know if that she wasn't the victor of the first three, but whatever. Definitely the first half of the first season, like yeah, she was getting shit on. I really like.
Well, but at the same time, like when in Marine, I mean, she was fighting a losing battle, right? Like she was, you know, the Sons of the Harpy were just like destroying her, you know, were destroying her forces and stuff. It's like, well, she's done the necessary things to finally like put out what she needs to put out.
Mm-hmm. I really like the conversation that she had with Tyrion when he was kind of like being really like defensive and kind of apologetic. She's just sitting there letting him talk. She's like, yeah, okay, let's go. It's all right. I like that because Tyrion explained away very well what his plan was, and I think he laid it out well. Like, you know, they're here because, you know, they're fighting against like the idea of what a free city is. They're not necessarily against you. She's like, okay, let's go.
Yeah.
And then yeah.
Well, and what I even like there is like, so she finally has like a hand, right? Like he's probably going to be her hand, and then what I liked about that first part wasn't so much. I mean, the battle was fine. You know, dragons. But what I really liked was the brother and sister, coming to see her.
when the
Greyjoy,
Arya, and she was flirting left and right with Daenerys. Yeah. That was pretty funny.
But the sister has a very deceptive body. I think, you know.
There we go.
Yeah, I'm just saying. She's trying to help you out over here. It's deceptive.
And I also liked how.
Let's just say, if she didn't dress in front of you, you wouldn't be like, you'd be like, oh wow, really? Wow, hey, you know, I'm just telling you, you know, you gotta give credit where credit's due.
You done now?
No, I'm not. Let's talk about a little bit more.
I also liked how Tyrion was given to Theon pretty good. So like, little things, right? I like those little aspects of it. But yeah, that whole scene. In Marine was good, and it looks like we're finally getting some movement too. They got some ships, and looks like that attack is finally gonna get underway. Yeah, I liked how the Dothraki came in and mauled the Sons of the Harpies there too. So like, everything's in place over there. All right, Battle of the Bastards. Okay, let's see. Why the hell did Rickon just run in a straight line?
Yeah, no, I know.
The hell is that?
No, I know.
And everybody knows, but like,
yeah,
it has to be said. Like, what is that?
So you know, this,
like, why didn't he go hide behind the you know, they had the fires of the the sigil.
Yeah,
why didn't he go hide behind that? Like,
you're already free of him, you know.
Yeah,
and why did he grow like 10 feet? You know, why is he almost like a head shorter than one? I mean, that's what I want to know. So here's the thing, like. As good as it was, there's a lot of problems logically with that, right? And it just there are certain things that really didn't make sense to me. Especially, I really felt that Jon Snow was out of character, right? Because he's usually kind of like the one that he doesn't let his emotions get the better of him. And this is kind of why I've been worried about Jon Snow the whole time. Like it got to the point where this season where I felt that.
when it came to like actually fighting that fight, that he wouldn't fight. Like, I just felt like his heart wasn't in it, right? And he's like probably the biggest character, I think, that's had the biggest change. Like, everybody wants to talk about Sansa, but really, like, if you look at Jon Snow's character this year, there's a lot of flaws in his character, and it didn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, Sansa even says, like, you know, he's going to draw you out. Don't get drawn out, right? And then during this time, you can't say, like, oh, hey, by the way, like, the Vale's probably going to come, right? So
that was, let's talk about the Vale thing later then. So I thought that was interesting.
You talk about Rickon, right? Like, how come Jon Snow's right there to say, Rickon, go to the right? You know,
yeah.
Like, they're like, yeah,
yeah,
go
if
there.
He's looking at where the arrows are, he could just be like, right.
That way.
Yeah. Right. I just kind of thought it was funny, that conversation, because, like, Sansa's like, you know, like, I don't know what to tell you for strategy, but just whatever he wants you to do, don't do that. He's like, oh yeah, is that not obvious? But the very first thing he does in the battle, and also wasn't the whole strength of the battle strategy was for them to stay where they were,
mm-hmm.
and let the Bolton forces attack them,
yeah.
and draw them in, and then try to surround.
Yeah.
And there was no trench digging either, right? Like, they're talking about digging some trenches. I don't know if that ever happened either, right? So all the things that they talked about in that battle plan just kind of went completely out the window. But I think I don't think it's out of character that he, yes, I know he's disciplined, okay, but I think also the one thing that, like, that he would care about was the couple of family members that were actually good to him, and I think Rickon was one of, like, the two youngers were, like, the only people that treated him like he was their brother.
Yeah.
And so,
along with Arya.
Yeah, and Arya. And so, in that sense, I don't think it's out of character that if he sees his brother running for his life, that he was gonna go. So that I don't have any story problem there. And then I guess from that sense, and this is why I really like Ser Davos, but, like, and then when he just figured, okay, well, if Jon Snow's going, we gotta go, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. Like, I liked everything he did in that scene, even though,
who, like, Davos?
Yeah,
yeah.
Even though, like, it doesn't seem like it was, like, big parts or anything, it's like he had a plan, and then Jon Snow basically scrapped that plan immediately, and then Davos had to adapt and say, okay, go. And then when they sat back and they had their archers, and then it kind of, that also kind of reminded me, it was a really reminiscent of Braveheart in some ways. And the whole scene where they're fighting in the middle, yeah. and then
well, the they will hit theirs as well.
Yeah. Like, pardon, beg pardon, son. Won't we hit some of them? Oh, we get theirs too. Right. And so Ramsay was just like, let it fly.
Yeah.
But Davos was like, no, we're only gonna kill our own men. And then he got to a certain point. I think the line was like, what, we're just taking a shit out here anyway. Let's go.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah,
they charged in.
Well, and that was kind of the. See, and that's kind of like the other problem that I had with it as well, right? Because it's like they set things up a certain way. Like when Jon Snow, you know, said, like, you know, let's just me and you fight, and Ramsay's like, no. He's like, well, you know, I don't think your men are going to follow you, you know, when you could have saved them, you know. So the whole thing is that, and here's the other problem that I have too, is that it's not like Bolton had this major stronghold on his troops, right? And because for the most part, yeah, okay, so he's made alliances with the top level guys, but a lot of those troops are Stark guys, right? They're used to having the Starks be in control. The Starks, for the most part, treating them well. The Umbers, not so much. But the whole thing is, like, if you're going to have, like, and not only that, so, like, Jon Snow being a bastard is a bad thing. Bruce Bolton being a bastard is the best thing ever, right? It's like, you mean to tell me...
Ramsay?
Yeah, I'm sorry, yeah. Ramsay being a bastard, like, it's like the best, like, yeah, you're a bastard, dude. Let's have a drink, right? It's like, you don't think that if some bastard started shooting arrows at me and you, and we had problems with bastards at that time, because it's not good to be a bastard. If we're getting shot out by our own arrows and the bastards controlling it, don't you think that me and you would stop what we're doing and, like, either, like, leave or go attack him? It's like, so there's just, like, things that, like, kind of, like, got left unsaid. Like, there's this undying loyalty to Bolton. And it didn't make any sense. It's like, how come you can have one bastard here, and then you can have the other bastard over here? It's like, well, I'm going to follow this bastard instead of following that bastard.
you know?
Not too bested.
Yeah.
Too bested.
That's what I'm saying, dude. So, you know, there's that. And then kind of like the veil thing happened. And it's like, well, didn't we just see this? Like, didn't the Dothraki just do this as well? So, and then Sansa doesn't tell him, and there's no strategy involved there. And then Sansa's saying, like, I don't know much about strategy, but I do know that you need to have a bigger cavalry than the other people do, so I'm going to call this cavalry. And it's, I liked it, but the more you think about it, it's like, it's kind of like, it could have been done better.
So, there's this guy that I follow on Twitter that I followed him through, through Grantland. Mm-hmm. And so he's a pretty funny guy. He does a lot of basketball and wrestling and like very, very in-depth stories on Game of Thrones.
He's still writing? Where's he writing?
He's on whatever.
Is it Deadspin?
No, whatever Simmons started now.
Okay, so Simmons started his own website again?
Yeah.
So I gotta start reading it?
Yeah.
Okay, alright.
It's
like, yeah, I know who it is. He's good.
His column's called Ask the Maester.
Yeah.
Okay, so he had like a, you know, question and answer session. And so one of the questions was about this thing with Sansa, the Knights of the Vale, right? And so he had three like different ideas. One was Sansa didn't know if they were going to come because she never got a return raven. Two was that like Sansa is now angling for power, and she knows that, and she let Jon Snow go into that battle thinking maybe if he dies then it's easier for her to take power. And then I forget, the third one was the one that kind of made the most sense. I forget what the one that made the most sense. I forgot.
Yeah.
But because I don't think Sansa's going, I don't think she's going like full heel turn. But but it was but
like, it was good.
Yeah, but I mean, I thought that the whole just the throwing out the idea that maybe Sansa's gone bad and is getting power hungry, I thought that could be an interesting side to it. But no, I thought it was, yeah, I didn't understand why she wouldn't just tell Jon Snow, because she's like politicking the whole time, well, we shouldn't attack. And obviously she's trying to hold off the attack to see, I think, waiting for the Knights of the Vale. Why don't she just say, hey, I might have this. Like, so there's got to be something, I don't know, sinister is the word, but there's got to be something
devious
at play, right? That mm-hmm. some reason why she would withhold that.
Well, it's about time, right? It's about time with her, right? Because you have all these. So the whole thing, the whole other thing, too, that people aren't forgetting is that, you know, Jon Snow isn't the rightful heir, and neither is Sansa. I mean, Bran is the rightful heir, and he was, when everybody left, he was king of Winterfell at that time. So that's like the other thing too, right? It's like you have all these elements coming back, you know, Bran, you know, and then on top of that, you still have the White Walkers you got to deal with as well. So I mean, was the payoff good? Yeah, the payoff was good, and the payoff was really good when they got to the castle, right? I mean, and one, I mean, you knew he was going to die, right? Like I knew he was going to die.
I knew at some point he was going to die. I was hoping that he could have extended his stay. He was the MVP though, man. He went out like a champ. That sucked.
That sucked. All right.
He was fun. He was. And when they started off, there was a handful of giants, right?
Yeah. One of them died.
Like trying to break into the Castle Black.
Yeah.
And then this one was kind of similar to that, where like he charged through and he. I mean, they wouldn't have been able to siege Winterfell if he didn't break that door down. So he gave the sacrifice. I will miss
yeah.
Hodor.
Yeah, Hodor and him go in the same season.
I wasn't as attached to Hodor.
Yeah.
I like Hodor, but
Hodor affected me.
Did he?
And let's just say, like, I knew one was going to die no matter what. Not because I read the book or anything, but I saw it coming, right? And I was like, well, like something already else is bad that has happened today, so it lessened the blow. I mean, I'm still upset that Game 7 hasn't happened in the NBA Finals, or I'll never be able to see it. But, you know, since I was already let down, I was prepared for 1-1 to... But the whole thing is like he's on his like hands and knees, and he's like, well, like, he could probably get through it, right? I mean, because he's like, the worst is over, and you expect like Jon Snow to say thank you to him or something, and like fight, and then he gets the arrow in the eye, and it's like, ah, all right.
So, do you wonder why Ramsey had the one that one shot and he shot 1-1 and not Snow?
I have no idea. I don't know.
was that another hole in the logic for you?
No, the reason why, I have a perfectly logical explanation. Because Ramsey wanted to fight Jon Snow 1-on-1, and if he beat Jon Snow, then he's still, you know, then he's still King of Winterfell. Like, the, you know, for the rules of war, you know, and that's what he said. He's like, you know, he's like, I'll take that fight now.
I guess so, but I mean, he didn't really look like he was trying to fight Jon Snow. I mean, he said, right?
What was he trying to do? Just hang out or what? Well, I mean, he was trying to kill him. He just doesn't.
Well, as soon as Snow got, you know, blocked that third arrow, then Ramsay didn't get a, he didn't even get a swing out.
Yeah.
So, that was the thing I could never figure out. Like, I mean, obviously Ramsay was like a pretty sadistic guy, but I never really found out like if this guy could fight, right? And I was hoping.
Everything he's done was through surprise or manipulation.
Right.
So he's never never had a fight, like actual fight one on one.
That's what I didn't know. And I was kind of thinking that maybe he would have something for Jon Snow. But once Jon Snow got to him, I mean, he basically just beat the crap out of him.
Yeah.
And he didn't really even put up, I didn't feel like he put up much of a fight.
Yeah.
He just got rocked.
Well, because, I mean, you know, with what he did with Theon, was like he kind of stabbed Theon in the back. And everything else is like, you know, he was able to kill someone in close quarters because they trusted him, right? And so I think, you know, I mean, basically, like he was presented, you know, he's presented as cowardly. You know, he was a sadistic coward, and so it kind of falls in line of being a coward, right? Okay. So yeah,
fair enough. Okay, did you interpret his words to Sansa as saying that he thought she was pregnant?
I don't know those words.
Right before she sacked the dogs on him, and mm-hmm. he was like, it's like, you know, I'm a part of you forever.
Yeah.
It was like the last thing he said.
I didn't take it that way, but it wouldn't surprise me that she was, maybe. I don't know.
I didn't take it that way either, but a lot of stuff that I read in discussion, I heard people speculating, so I just wanted to see if you shared that opinion or not.
I have no idea. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. Would it suck? Yeah, I think it would suck, but I think it was more of a case of what she was when he first met her, when they first met, and what she is now, and even like kind of the actions that she took were because of him. And
yeah, that's what I take it as, like what I've done to you has changed you as a person, and you'll never go back to who you were before what I did to you.
Yeah, no, she's become an interesting character.
Finally.
Yeah, because you didn't like her. It's a big transformation with her. You know, you have Littlefinger back in, so I wouldn't be jumping up and down.
I know. I don't feel comfortable for Jon Snow.
Yeah. So, we'll see how it goes. I mean, Jon Snow is he's not going to be there. He's had his chance to be king of Winterfell, so that's not his end game. I still think, you know, he's going to be involved with Daenerys in some way, and I think that's going to be another major play as well. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I think the kind of the thing is that you have King's will I ever get this thing right? It's not King's Landing.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, yeah, I got it right. I will get it right. I mean, so, you know, you have King's Landing going on right now, but the real, you know, the White Walkers are coming, right? And especially, like, next season. So, the stage is set for not so much King's Landing. It's going to be Winterfell. And if it's a case where they save the Seven Kingdoms, that's where I think you're going to have your shift of power a little bit there. So, we'll see how it goes. I mean, it's we're looking into the next season. I can't believe that there's one season left. And I can't believe that the book isn't even out yet. You know.
Now, how are you sure that there's only one
season? I think I read online that there's only like... It's going to be the last season for that one. So everything... And I don't know.
I don't know what's going to...
It's not a very good call.
Not a very good call.
Well, where else can you go? I mean, the whole thing is like the Starks can only be like the... They can only be the punching bag for so long. And then, you know, are they going to... You're going to punch them again and destroy that house again?
I just think the way that the seasons play out like relatively slowly... I think you still have a lot of stuff to get done that I wouldn't necessarily, unless like every episode because you know there was probably like four episodes that were pretty slow this year. I don't know that you can get everything accomplished in one season that needs to get done. Because I mean, what, Daenerys still hasn't even left Meereen, so there's got to be her crossing the sea, and then she's got to get to King's Landing. Well, I guess we'll probably get some kind of resolution on the trial next week is my assumption. So then you have to see what happens.
I think the whole place is going to burn. I think they have a bunch of dragon fire. Remember all that dragon fire they had underneath?
Yeah.
I think Cersei's going to set fire to the whole place. I think the place is going to burn, Dean.
Yeah?
I think so. And which would make the most sense, too. You know, because you have all those... The religious army and stuff and like that, and...
Wait, all the dragon fire is underneath the church or whatever?
It's underneath, I think it's all underneath all of King's Landing, because, I mean, that's the whole reason why, right? Like, that's like, and see, even like Tyrion alluded to it, right? You know, and that's like, that's why Jaime became the Kingslayer, because he wanted to burn the whole city down. And I think that's where Cersei's, I mean, people forget about Cersei, but she's, when her back's against the wall, you know,
she's
like...
She's capable of anything.
Yeah, people have forgotten how Cersei was, so...
Let me ask you this, then. What's her feelings towards Tommen right now? Then, like, it's time. Like, everyone's got to go, and if Tommen gets caught up, then he gets caught up.
I think so. I mean, I think Tommen.
Does she feel like he turned against her?
Well, she knows that Tommen's going to die, right? Like, that's the other thing too. Is like she knows all three of her kids are going to die.
How does she know that?
Because there's that prophecy. Remember the prophecy when she went to talk to that witch, and they said that, you know, that all three were going to die by, like, other people's hands or something like that. So, I think her back's against the wall. She can't control him. And Tommen is a punk. Tommen's just a misguided fool, you know. It's that there's something talking to him, you know. And once that starts talking to him, then all everything else kind of goes by the wayside.
I don't see how you can blame him for letting that...
I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying. you got to get it while you can, because it's not going to be that much longer. So we'll see how it goes. But I don't know what the balance of power is going to be after that. I mean, here's the other thing too, is that you have Jaime at the bridges. I mean, they pretty much run everything, except for the north. They don't know that Bolton's been taken out of power yet, because he was a warden of the north by the Lannisters. So you're going to have that conflict again. You're going to have Winterfell. And them again, and maybe it's a case where
Brienne's gonna have to go against the Kingslayer.
Well, not that, but I think it's a case of if Cersei can be the Queen Regent like she is, you know, and it can be blamed on something else, and she can run the kingdom like she wants to, because she's a Queen Regent or whatever it is. I don't know where the balance of power comes after that, because there's no other Baratheon heirs, so I don't know.
But if the city burns to the ground, then where is she gonna? Where is she going to wield power from?
That's to be decided, right?
Go back to
parts unknown.
Casterly Rock, their spot.
Yeah. So we'll see how it goes. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. So,
luckily there's better writers for Game of Thrones than there is for WWE. So there we go. All right, so we're finishing this up. Thanks for sticking with us for an hour and a half. I have my boy Bet I Have My Donuts over here. Good job today, man. You know, it was stuff that. You know, you got to say how you're pro steroids. I got to do my John Cena rant, like a which has been a long time coming. It's kind of like the build for Battle of the Bastards, right?
Yeah.
75 minutes of pleasure on Sunday with watching Game of Thrones finale. So you know who's rumored to come back is, and I kind of wanted to keep this quiet, but because I already know that this person is maybe not. If I was to say, you know, someone might make a surprise appearance, a character from the past, who do you think it would be?
Someone that we think has died.
Yeah.
I wish it was Martell, but I know that's not happening.
No, it's not going to be Martell. something that's going to shake everything up. So you don't know. So
Stannis?
No, it's not going to be Stannis. So you might be surprised, because I'm hearing rumors, grumblings that this person's coming back, and it was in the book that person is back. So, you know.
Okay, was it the like the Targaryen, the father of snow, perhaps?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not going to say whether it is or isn't.
Okay. Well, you said no to everybody else, so I guess that's the guy.
You never know. You never know.
Could be.
Okay, so move scale. We don't say the number because my boy, Large Professor told me not to say the number anymore.
We squashed that gimmick.
Bet at my donuts. I'm Ben and Jerome. We'll check you out next week, and that is that.
We squashed it.
Yeah,
we squashed.
John Cena sucks.
Delivery is COD. Word is bonus. We got it going on tonight. Don't nobody want to.